Now it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale frequently.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belville.
All right, welcome back, tokers and tokettes and non-token lovers of liberty. It's Tuesday, February 9th, 2016. It's hour two of the Russ Belville Show. And it's our special segment previewing the International Cannabis Business Conference. It's taking place this weekend at the Hyatt Regency in San Francisco, 13th and 14th of this month. Check out internationalcbc.com for more information. We've got a special panel joining us of speakers and presenters who will be at the International Cannabis Business Conference. Say hello to Anthony Johnson, the chief petitioner for Measure 91 in Oregon. Hi, Anthony.
Hey, Russ.
We've got Debbie Goldsberry on the line, longtime activist from California. Hi, Debbie.
Hi there.
And Guyo Belum is still waiting on the line, cannabis comedian extraordinaire. Hi, and Guyo.
Extraordinaire.
That's right. I don't use that word lightly.
That's right.
Our phone lines are open.
I've accepted a new position. I'm teaching magical plants at Potworks.
Our phone lines are open.
Seems like for slipping there.
Our phone lines are open at 971-533-7111. We had a caller who was dialing in earlier. I hope you dial back because it's time for the calls now. Let's go back to our panel and discuss a little bit about what's happening at ICBC. And Guyo, I understand that in addition to all of the heavy-duty activism work that we'll be doing and learning that we'll be doing, there's also a lot of fun at the ICBC. Can you give us a rundown?
Well, one, you're in San Francisco, so come on. There's that. It's still cool, even though, you know, it's expensive. It's more expensive than it used to be. Two, Tommy Chong's going to be there. He's going to make an appearance at the Friday night show, and Steve Bloom, the former editor of Hot Times Magazine, is going to do an interview with him, so that will be entertaining and funny and lively, of course. And I think Del the Funky Homo Sapien is there again this year, and I will be around with fresh bon mots and witticisms to make the day go fast. Entertainment, sir.
Yes, yes.
And parties and networking and weed.
And lots of weed. And Del the Funky Homo Sapien, I've seen him at the past couple ICBCs. It's always a delight to check him out in an intimate setting like what we get there. And it will be a lot of fun. Maybe we'll get Alex out there dropping some rhymes too. He's pretty talented.
He's a pretty good freestyler. We had a pretty good cipher at the last one in Ashford, which is a mix of Ashland and Medford in Ashland, Oregon. That was pretty good. I busted some rhymes. I spit a hot 16 too. So
I think you were thinking of
everybody
Ashford.
Comes out with pure fire.
I think you were thinking of Ashford and Simpson for some reason. I don't know why.
I work because there ain't no mountain high enough to keep me from eating
right.
Rest.
We've got a question for Debbie Goldsberry coming in from our chat room. John Chambers wants to know about your opinion on the two-tiered system, having medical and recreational be separate. And he brings up the point that here in Oregon, adult consumers are turning to their medical marijuana friends to be able to get weed without the 25% tax or to get extracts and edibles that they can't purchase yet. Does that concern you, that difference between medical and recreational tending to incentivize recreational users to abuse the medical side?
Whoa, that's complicated. Well, one thing is, I don't think that we're going to have that problem like you guys have up there where we won't have access to the supply. You know, I think that across the board, we'll still have access to the edibles and to the extracts while we wait for these regulations to come out. So that should solve a problem there. But look, all of these taxes are set so high. This is all still about prohibition. This is a sin tax, make no mistake about it. Can you imagine that here in Oakland, we're going to have to pay 10% of every sale will have to go straight to our city? That's crazy. Then sales tax, that's another 9.5 cents, percent of the sale. Then the federal government and the state government take 45% of all gross sales. It's untenable. We're not, or all gross income, I should say. It's, nobody's going to be able to survive under these sin taxes for long. So what do I think? As long as there's a prohibition, we're going to find ways around it. The sin taxes are ridiculous. A 10% tax on adult personal consumption of cannabis is just simply a prohibition with a different colored jacket on, and it's not going to work. So do I think people are going to game the medical system? Well, I hope that they can get their cannabis cheaper than the prices that's going to happen if we continue with these sin taxes that are happening out there. It's actually quite frankly ridiculous. So I am basically opposed to all of the high business license taxes. For example, at Berkeley Patients Group, before they slapped us with the sin tax of 2.5% on our medical marijuana dispensary over there, we were only paying 0.12% for our business license tax. And then they raised it to 2.5% of gross sales. So it was a huge increase. Mm. Here at Magnolia Wellness, where I'm the director now in Oakland, we have to watch every single dollar that we bring in so that we can make sure to pay our bills to the taxation agents. That doesn't even include to be able to bring, you know, give services to our community or offer free services to our member. So I think the problem really is the sin tax and the fact that prohibition keeps living on no matter how they figure it out. Now they're going to do it in the form of higher taxes. It's simply not fair, and it's going to mean, yeah, people are going to game the system. How do I feel about it? End prohibition, and we won't have this problem.
And Gaio, did you have something to add?
I was going to say, I pretty much agree with Debbie. I think one of the challenges when bringing cannabis law reform into creation or whatever is that people are already outlaws, right? So if you make the taxes too ridiculous or you make the barrier to entry too high, no one's going to jump through your hoop. You know what I'm saying? I mean, California, marijuana does not need California's money. California needs marijuana's money, you know? And so they have to work out a balance so that everybody who's already in the game can kind of stay in the game, because they won't leave the game just because there's new cats in, and they already have an advantage. They know how to grow weed and they know how to sell weed illegally. So all these new cats, I mean, the black market in Colorado hasn't gone anywhere, you know? Right?
Yeah.
Even though Colorado is still making millions upon millions of dollars in taxes, but I think there's a better way to do it. And I think California should be in front of that and not just trying to do it the same old ways.
Now, Anthony, that remark about Oregon and the 25% tax and not having edibles or extracts, that's a temporary situation until the adult use shops come online later this year. But do you still think it's going to be a problem? Because then there'll be a 17% tax plus 3% local?
You know, I think it will likely be a problem in some communities and sometimes, but I think that in Oregon with the canopy limits we're going to have, I think prices are going to stay relatively affordable, and that we're not going to see widespread issues. But yeah, if the taxes remain high and it boosts the price too high and the fees that people have to pay, both local and state, and to jump through regulatory testing hoops, if the cost gets too expensive, then like Debbie Ngayo said, that just becomes prohibition like any other name, under a different name, and which I think states have seen in regards to cigarettes. You know, cigarette taxes get so high, all of a sudden you bring back an illicit market on cigarettes. So I think it's something that advocates are going to have to be vigilant about, and something that regulators and policymakers and politicians are just going to be realistic about, and that if the if people are gaming the system and the system is being flouted and we're not bringing in the tax revenue that we should, then we need to consider the tax rate and think about reducing it and not having it at such a level where it is just increasing or keeping prohibition around.
We're continuing our discussion of the International Cannabis Business Conference. You can check out more information at internationalcbc.com. Panelists Anthony Johnson, Debbie Goldsberry, and Ngayo Bilam are joining us on the phone. And you can call in live if you've got a question at 971-533-7111. We do have another question from our chat room. And given me and Ngayo disagreeing about Ohio's Issue 3 last year, this question's for Ngayo. Considering recent lawsuits and the increasing corporatization of the industry, is there a danger that greed could become the movement's Achilles heel?
Yes, of course. I mean, greed is America's Achilles heel. You might want to say it like that sometimes. I mean, time and time and time again, it's been proven that people just get greedy and then they fuck everything up. We can say that on the internet. And I think that's one of the things that we try to reinforce at the International Cannabis Business Conference, is that there's got to be, maybe you don't want to call it social justice, but there's got to be an understanding of how to go about things the right way. You know, I generally operate from the premise that the hippies were pretty much right about everything. So I think we have to remember to, and I'm not saying that you can't make money, because shit, this is America. Everybody should make money, right? But can you do it the right way? Can you do it without creating a monopoly? Can you do it without being an asshole? Can you do it so that you can have Budweiser and Anchor Steam and Rustaller and microbrews? You know what I'm saying? And you can homebrew. You feel me?
Yeah, yeah. And that seems to be the tightrope that supporters in California are walking right now, Debbie, with this Adult Use of Marijuana Act, where some are pointing to other initiatives that frankly don't have much of a chance of making the ballot, but they point to them as being better for the small grower or better for the little guy or less corporate. Are you concerned about that when we look at a legalization in California of it being over corporate, or have the people with adult use of marijuana put in enough? I know they're going to restrict large grows. They're going to tighten some of the stuff there to try to restrict big marijuana from taking over. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's so complicated. You know, the big problem is the fact that that initiative's so long. It's like 68 pages, 62 pages, something like that. And within all those details, there's a bunch of stuff that doesn't need to be in there. And it still keeps a lot of felonies, a lot of the crimes that should just be wiped off the book still remain wobblers in our state system. So we're still going to see that there's the ability for people to go to jail for felonies in California for cannabis. I mean, the real disappointment is this. The disappointment is, why didn't we write a law that's perfect? You know, why didn't we take time, work together, and create something that was actually going to close all the gaps? And that's what the confusion is about ALMA. It's not that it's not good enough. It's not that we couldn't live with it. It's not that it's not steps forward. The question is, why didn't we write a better law? It actually is boggling people's minds. And we know when you put a law on the book that's good enough or okay, things go good. You know, prohibition recedes a little bit. But unfortunately, it's usually low-income people or people of color who continue to be targeted by these laws. And it greatly concerns me that the law contains all these different things that say, you know, you could still participate in the legal market if you've been arrested for cannabis before, if you have a cannabis sales felony, if you can convince us that you can do it. And so I start to think, well, who's going to be able to convince past that? It's certainly not going to be a lot of my friends. You know, we're going to be stuck still in the illegitimate market. Mm-hmm. I just don't understand, Russ. Why didn't we write a better law? It makes no sense to me.
And Gaio, why didn't we write a better law?
Because they kick the hippies out the room, which sometimes is often necessary. But like you said, man, greed is greedy, you know? And so if you let a bunch of people who only see money write the law, they're going to make it so that they can make the most amount of money. And this is what happens. And also, people seem to want to overcomplicate this. It's not very hard to do. You just say regulate it like booze. And voila, you're pretty much ready to go and make the taxes pretty simple. It's not rocket science. It's marijuana. You know what I'm saying? You're not trying to land a satellite on an asteroid. You're just trying to let people grow weed and have farmers markets and sit around and be social, and we'll give you some money. It shouldn't be this hard to do, right? We're trying to give you protection money and you're trying to make it ridiculous. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Anthony, you've actually had to go through this in 2013 and 2014, putting together the Measure 91 campaign in Oregon against, you know, a groundswell of some people in the Oregon community that really wanted something more open, more free. And some of those people now complaining that some of their predictions came true, that medical's getting clamped down on. Any advice for the campaign in California as they move forward?
Well, yeah, and I think a lot of it goes to the point that Debbie and Ngaio already made about writing the measure in the first place. I mean, when once it's written and filed, then you're you're really stuck with it. And so my advice is to, you know, is always to support the policy that is better than prohibition, but plan on organizing and improving it at the legislature or even potentially on down the line with the new initiative. I mean, I think one of the big differences between California and Oregon, for instance, is just the vast expense of California. And so it's going to getting on the ballot and running a campaign is going to be run by moneyed interests. And when you have, you know, the national funders of these issues, they have to answer to their contributors, and their contributors and donors don't want to lose. No one, they don't want to donate $250,000, $1 million, whatever it may be, and actually lose. So the national funders want a measure that is going to win. And so I think for activists across the country, if you do have a seat at the table with national funders, you always want to push for and advocate for the most progressive law that can win. You know, here in Oregon, our funders were very much the national funders that funded the Washington State I-502 measure that did not include a home grow provision and included a per se DUI provision. Now, I just made it really a deal breaker that I was not going to be a chief petitioner or be involved in any measure that did not have a home grow cultivation, and I was adamant there could not be a per se DUI. So I think it's important to stand up for a few core beliefs, but if you want something on the ballot, you're going to have to make some compromises. So, you know, I think here in Oregon, and I think all across the country, you're going to see rollbacks on medical marijuana, especially with an unregulated system. But like I said, those rollbacks are always attempted. And I am here still fighting for the medical marijuana program, even post-legalization, to protect patients and do all that we can to keep the rights that we've earned and to keep the cannabis law in Oregon core to our values of decreasing penalties and taking care of patients. And in Oregon, we're looking more and more like in a few years, we're not going to have any marijuana felonies. So I think my message is it's worth it to legalize it, but you definitely want to be vigilant and you definitely need to stand up for core values. And nothing really prevents the corporate takeover like having home cultivation where people can cultivate themselves and share amongst their friends.
All right, we've got a couple of minutes before we hit the special time of the day. We got a question from our chat room, and I'll send this one to Debbie. Has the legalization movement prepared a game plan for the potential of a Republican president a year from now?
You know what? I've been pondering this myself, and I don't think we have a game plan ready. I think that our only plan is to show strength going into that election, coming out of the next election, so that we're as unassailable as possible when we start to be assailed by the Republicans. I think they're making it fairly clear, you know, they're not supportive, although I think that they know they can't trounce us out completely because we do have so much voter support. So, you know, every once in a while you see somebody like Trump saying, softening a tiny bit on these issues. But honestly, as a community, I don't think we've dealt with this issue at all. And if we get a Republican president, our feet will be to the fire. And believe me, they have been for years. We move very fast and we're very nimble, so we'll be ready for it, whatever happens. But you know what? It just makes me think that we have to work harder and harder to make sure that doesn't happen and that we have to get behind a Democratic candidate and make sure that, you know, that they win.
And Ngaio, Anthony mentioned a couple of deal breakers for him on legalization, no home grow and per se DUID. Are there other things that you would say you can't vote for that? It's a deal breaker if that's included in a legalization plan?
2016 is very important, and I think it's important for all the states to send a message. I'm hoping that Arizona and New Mexico can manage to legalize, and I think Nevada is going to legalize also in 2016, and I hope California can follow suit. So I'm inclined to vote yes for just about anything, but I would say that Home grow is important. No per se DUI. Hello?
Yeah, we're still here.
And yeah. And I would also say that in California, we strongly need to.
I drank beer heavily and tried drugs enthusiastically.
Oh, so sorry to cut you off, Engayo, but it's that special time of the day. It's 4:20 here in the Pacific time zone. That means me and Debbie and Anthony and Engayo have to retreat to a very special union-mandated safety meeting. We'll be back after these messages to wind things up with Debbie, Anthony, and Engayo right after this. Gather with fellow cannabis companies past the Golden Gate to San Francisco and the 2016 International Cannabis Business Conference, February 13th and 14th at the fabulous Hyatt Regency. Register now at internationalcbc.com. Learn from leading industry luminaries like cannabis celebrity legend Tommy Chong, former Surgeon General Dr. Joycelyn Elders, best-selling author Andrew Sullivan, and so many more. Plus, exhibitors, expert panels, and education made to calibrate your new or existing cannabis plan. Catch CannabisRadio.com and The Russ Belville Show at the 2016 International Cannabis Business Conference and register at internationalcbc.com now.
Gondrepreneur.com, your guide to the cannabis business world. Gondrepreneur.com is a comprehensive resource for cannabis professionals and entrepreneurs. Download the Gondrepreneur app on your smartphone or tablet to catch up on cannabis industry news, scroll through our daily job listings, and learn about successful cannabis companies, executives, and investors. Gondrepreneur.com, helping Gondrepreneurs grow.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
We need to build a wall.
Okay, maybe you're high too.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com, and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Warning, hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that. This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. 23 after the hour, and we've got another 6 minutes to go here with our esteemed panel from the International Cannabis Business Conference. We've been joined by Anthony Johnson from the Measure 91 campaign in Oregon, and Debbie Goldsberry from California, and Engayo Belum from California. They're all panelists at the International Cannabis Business Conference. Check it out at internationalcbc.com. You can still get tickets. The show is this weekend, and it features former Surgeon General Dr. Joycelyn Elders, conservative blogger and best-selling author Andrew Sullivan, cannabis icon Tommy Chong, and conservative Republican Dana Rohrabacher, liberal Democrat Representative Blumenauer, Earl Blumenauer. They're all going to be there. It's an amazing event. I've done every one of them, and I can't recommend them highly enough. Of course, I recommend just about everything highly, but still, that's the way we do here at the Russ Belville Show. Welcome back, everybody, and I just want to give our guests some free time here, about 2 minutes each, to be able to say what they want to say and preview the conference and give their words of wisdom. Let's start with Engayo Belum. Engayo, you got 2 minutes to tell folks what you want to tell them. Go right ahead.
Follow me on Twitter, NGAIO420. Come to the International Cannabis Business Conference and learn about cannabis business and network with people. Women and people of color are strongly encouraged to attend. Also, to my last point before we went to the commercial, I think that California needs to realize that this is a statewide concern, and we shouldn't be allowing cities and counties to ban any sort of the cannabis business, because there's going to be a lot of cannabis money, and it's unfair to everybody if there are some counties who are going to want to, that's enough. You know, you get my point.
I get your point. Thank you very much, Ngayo. Debbie Goldsberry, your final thoughts?
Yes. Well, thank you for having me on the show. I've been here at Magnolia Wellness this whole time in Oakland. Super fun. I wish I could show everyone the dispensary. But we are sponsoring ICBC because, you know, we believe that medical marijuana and the legalization, we're still a movement. This is, you know, maybe we're headed towards an industry, but more and more people need to realize our work is not done. And we have to stay sharp on our political skills. We have to know how to make laws, move the grassroots, make changes. So I think that that's what's really important. But I also wanted to say, you know, we have some of the top cannabis experts from around the world coming. We have Ariane coming from the greenhouse. We have the guy who does Spanibus coming. The guy who throws the big hemp fest in the Czech Republic is coming. And we're going to really, we have Philippe Lucas coming from Canada. We're really talking about the global perspective and not just California or Oregon or what's happening with the legalization in the U.S. You know, we need to take this thing global. We need to get people out of prison, legalize marijuana. And hopefully at the end of it all, you know, it's not just a bunch of like, dudes that legalize it. Let's make sure that we make a better world, that through legalization we equal the playing field, and that equally important to us is thing equity, equality, fairness, getting permits to everybody who wants to be in the legal marketplace and not just the few. So that's what this is about. Let's even the playing field and help our own people and help the newcomers come in, understand this is a movement. It looks like an industry, but guess what? We're changing laws, we're changing people, and we're changing the way America is functioning by ending prohibition.
Wise words, Debbie. And before we let you go, do you have any social media or contacts or websites you'd like to plug?
Yeah, well, I'm on all the social media. I love communicating with people. My Facebook's really active, Debbie Goldsberry. I'm over there, Debbie with a Y. But check out Magnolia Wellness also. We're big on Instagram, Magnolia Oakland, and you'll find us on all the big social media channels.
All right. Thank you, Debbie Goldsberry. Anthony Johnson, your final thoughts.
Yeah, I think Debbie and Ngayo both summed it up really well. The International Cannabis Business Conference. Get your tickets at internationalcbc.com. We really mix business with activism. We want to legalize cannabis the right way. We keep it entertaining and engaging. We bring people from within the industry, including and also legal experts like Henry Wieckowski. So if you're involved in the cannabis industry and you need to deal with your taxes, we got the preeminent tax expert there. You know, when you have Ngayo emceeing, we keep it engaging and entertaining and humorous throughout. And the party Saturday night, sponsored by Magnolia, you know, featuring De La Funky Homo Sapien, Rocker T, the parties just keep getting better and better. And so we keep the networking going. We really take pride in our conferences and the valuable information we bring, but also that we always keep activism at our core, and we don't want to just legalize marijuana for legalize it so people can get rich. We want to keep people out of jail. We want to take care of patients, and we want to have a more prosperous future for the entire cannabis community, not just a few you know, suits and big business interests.
All right. Thank you so much to all my panel for joining us here for the International Cannabis Business Conference preview on the Russ Belville Show. If you missed any of this discussion, you'll be able to get it online at cannabisradio.com, or just visit my SoundCloud page, soundcloud.com/radicalRuss. You can embed and share all of this wisdom for all of your friends across the social media. Anthony Johnson, Debbie Goldsberry, and Ngayo Belum, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate you taking some time to fill people in on the International Cannabis Business Conference and what's happening on legalization and medical marijuana.
Thank you, Russ.
Thank you, man. Have a good one.
All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to ask the question, why do millennials want a President Bernie Sanders? Marijuana might have something to do with it. Also, the potent pot scare is back. Ooh, weed is so much more potent these days. Aren't you frightened? Plus your calls at 971-533-7111. I'm Radical Russ. We're right back after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Dr. Dabber, hurry! Its temperature is shooting past 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's burning up! I'm afraid for this little guy, it's just too late.
What caused the problem?
Only Dr. Dabber can maintain the perfect temperature for a smooth-tasting, slower burn. This standard vaporizer lost all of its health benefits, sending it up in smoke.
So you're telling me that most vapor pens burn so hot they produce smoke, not vapor?
Correct. Keep away from those standard vaporizer pens and turn to Dr. Dabber. Doctor's orders.
Less heat, more flavor.
Get the latest updates on the Russ Belville Show by following Radical Russ on Twitter and liking the Russ Belville Show on Facebook.
Doc Rob, the concierge for better living.
Cannabis is just one of the many great plants that we have on this planet called Earth that we can use consciously and intelligently to improve our well-being.
Take a real, raw, inside look at healthier living while sharing great ideas and improvements for a better quality of life.
Learning to live and live well is a lifelong process. This is a journey. You could be 80 years old or 8 years old. You can still learn something that's going to make tomorrow a little bit healthier, a little bit easier, a little bit happier, a little bit better.
The Concierge for Better Living with Doc Rob. Only on CannabisRadio.com.
The Fingerboard Extension has fretted instruments to enhance your creativity. It has new and used guitars and banjos from beginning to high class. The Fingerboard Extension has National Resophonic, Husson Dalton, Larrabee, Heritage and Recording King guitars, and Mike Ramsey, Wildwood, Gold Tone and Recording King banjos. The Fingerboard Extension also has drum stuff, used gear and parts. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis, Oregon at 120 Northwest 2nd, or check out the inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com and reverb.com.
Yar, thar be pirates here. Har, 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 har.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. 32 after the hour. Phone lines are open at 971-533-7111. That's 971-533-7111. It's not just a phone number, it's a hell of a hand in liar's poker. We're having some good times here at Roll the J Studios in beautiful Potland, Oregon, but this weekend, I'll be flying to San Francisco. We'll do the Friday show, and then I'm off to San Francisco for Saturday and Sunday at the International Cannabis Business Conference, and I'm going to stream live as much as I can. We'll see what happens. I think we're set for it, though. I think it's going to be good, and we'll be able to bring you live interviews and coverage of the International Cannabis Business Conference. Going to be a good time. Next weekend, I'll be in Seattle. Actually, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I'll be in Seattle for CannaCon. And CannabisRadio.com is the presenting sponsor of the VIP party at CannaCon in Seattle. So we're going to have a good time that weekend. And then the final weekend of February, I will be in Fort Worth, Texas for the Southwest Cannabis Conference and Expo. Looking forward to getting down to Fort Worth and visiting Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's best tattoo parlor, and Thomas Barrington, my good friend, will help fill in Richmond, Virginia, Columbus, Ohio, Anchorage, Alaska, and Jamaica on my expansive Legalize back tattoo. If you haven't seen my Legalize back tattoo, email me, radicalrus@gmail.com, and I'll show you where you can see the picture. But those of you who don't know, I have a tattoo on my back. It stretches shoulder to shoulder and over my left shoulder. Shoulder to shoulder, continental United States, with a pot leaf for every place I've ever done a marijuana legalization event. And it's just getting more and more and more, and I'm just excited. Although a little bit of trepidation for the pain. Although it's kind of nice when you get your tattoos done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo. They don't seem to care too much if you come in really baked. So that's a help, let me tell you. Tonight, of course, is the New Hampshire presidential primary. And Hillary Clinton is currently trailing Bernie Sanders by double digits leading up to tonight's vote. It's no secret that we're big Bernie Sanders fans. I mean, come on, man. His tagline is "Feel the Burn." How could a pot smoker not go for the tagline "Feel the Burn"? right there. You had me at feel the burn. But it doesn't hurt that the guy is calling for the descheduling of marijuana, not rescheduling like Hillary Clinton, but descheduling of marijuana. Now, the establishment Democrats are certainly feeling the burn because they had this plan to get Hillary Clinton her inevitable coronation, because it's her turn now, you know, like how Republicans do. But this has been overturned by the Bernie Sanders phenomenon. And most vexing to the punditocracy is Bernie's overwhelming support among young people, a.k.a. the millennials. Let's start with the baby boomer David Brock. He's a coordinator for one of Hillary Clinton's super PACs. And he thinks the millennials dislike Hillary Clinton because of mean old internet trolls. Oh, the terrible sexist internet trolls who say such nasty things about Hillary Clinton. That's why the millennials don't like her. He said, quote, "You wonder why there's such a gap in the millennial preference for Sanders over Hillary. I think if people took a look at what they're seeing," referring to the internet, "that would account for some of the deficit, the fact that they have a misimpression of her," end quote. Yeah, David Brock thinks it's the mean old internet trolls who fooled the young people into hating Hillary Clinton. Gloria Steinem, she's in her 80s, by the way. She's the feminist pioneer from, you know, way back in the 60s. Gloria Steinem was on Bill Maher's show on HBO this Friday. And she had an explanation for why the female millennials are flocking to Bernie Sanders. She said, quote, "When you're young, you're thinking, where are the boys? The boys are with Bernie," end quote. Even politically incorrect Bill Maher responded with, quote, "If I said that, you'd swat me," end quote. And sure enough, Steinem has gotten a lot of outrage over these comments from young millennial women, and she's walked back her comments a little bit, apologized for them a bit. But she said, quote, "When you're young, you're thinking, where are the boys? The boys are with Bernie." So Brock thinks it's the mean old internet trolls pouring haterade on Hillary. Steinem thinks it's the millennial females just flocking to the Bernie bros. Then you had Madeleine Albright. She was the first female Secretary of State, you know, Hillary Clinton's old job. She's in her 70s, by the way. Madeleine Albright, she scolded young women recently, I think it was this weekend, who struggle for women's equality. She scolded them because she says the struggle for women's equality isn't over and that these young women aren't standing by Hillary Clinton because they're resting on their laurels. They've had it too good. They've come up in the post Roe v. Wade generation. So that's why. That's why the young millennial women aren't supporting Hillary Clinton. And Madeleine Albright said, quote, "There's a special place in hell for women who don't help each other," end quote. Okay, so Brock's got it on the internet trolls. That's what makes us hate Hillary. Steinem says it's because the women are chasing the Bernie bros. Madeleine Albright says women are betraying Hillary because they're complacent. And then, of course, Bill Clinton, the baby boomer himself, he got in on the youth bashing. And he says, quote, "People who have gone online to defend Hillary, to explain why they have supported her, have been subject to vicious trolling and attacks that are literally too profane, often not to mention sexist, to repeat," end quote. First of all, you got to admire the cast iron huevos it takes for Bill Clinton to get on a stage and lecture anybody about sexism. That's slow clap material. That's bravo, Bill. Bravo. Lecturing us about sexism. Yeah, okay. But again, Clinton's taking the Brock line here. It's the mean, evil trolls that are causing all the problem. What all these pundits seem to be missing in examining Bernie Sanders' phenomenon among young people, where he won the millennial vote in Iowa by a 70-point margin, not 17, 70-point margin, 84% to 14%. Why does Bernie get 84% amongst the millennials in Iowa versus 14% for Hillary? It's not because of trolls. It's not because of sex. It's because Bernie, not Hillary, best represents the views of young people. Nowhere is this more obvious than the issue of marijuana legalization. In the 2015 Gallup poll, 71% of people aged 18 to 34 years old support marijuana legalization. 71%. Now, nationally, it's 58. 18 to 34, 71% support. Hillary Clinton has said, quote, "I think we need to be very clear about the benefits of marijuana for medicinal purposes. I don't think we've done enough research yet," end quote. Not enough. She can't even go out on a limb for medical marijuana, which young people, if it's below 90%, I'd be shocked. If it's below 95% support among young people for medical marijuana, I'd be flabbergasted. She can't even get out on the limb to support medical marijuana that's legal in 23 states and Washington, D.C. "I don't think we've done enough research yet," she says. "I guess 29,000 published studies in PubMed.gov aren't quite enough research yet." But once she has that research, she'll consider moving cannabis from Schedule 1, like heroin, LSD, and peyote, to Schedule 2, like cocaine, meth, and oxy. Hillary supports literally the smallest incremental change possible on medical marijuana, and she'd maintain the Obama administration's sit-back-and-watch approach to legalization. That's right, Roscoe, it's abominable. She'd just maintain the Obama administration's sit-back-and-watch approach to legalization. She's on her issues page, she only talks about broader criminal justice reform. She doesn't have a specific drug policy page. And the Obama administration's sit back and watch approach has been nice for Colorado, Washington, Oregon, Alaska to move forward, but no state can move any further forward, unless there's something done at the federal level about banking, about taxation, about a lot of issues at the federal level. Bernie, by contrast, has an issues page dedicated specifically to drug policy where he supports, quote, "legalized marijuana for medicinal use and ending the federal prohibition on marijuana," end quote. You want to know why Bernie's got a 70-point lead among millennials? It's because those millennials who support legalization by 71% are supporting the candidate who would legalize medical marijuana and end federal prohibition. Bernie even speaks directly to the young people affected by the war on drugs. He says, quote, "If you do not believe that there is a correlation between high youth unemployment and the fact that this country has more people in jail than any other country on earth, you would be wrong," end quote. Bernie also minces no words in calling for states' rights to tax and regulate cannabis, saying, quote, "In my view, states should have the right to regulate marijuana the same way that state and local laws now govern the sale of alcohol and tobacco," end quote. And that's just one issue on which the millennials are very focused and Bernie is speaking to them. There are so many other issues that we could discuss where Bernie is speaking to them and representing their views while Hillary Clinton is speaking at them and reacting to polls. You could add these issues. The military. Millennials are the ones whose friends come home missing limbs from the Middle East. Bernie Sanders wants to end our wars. Hillary Clinton never met a Mideast hostility she wouldn't engage. College. Millennials are the first generation to start their lives with crushing loads of student debt. Bernie Sanders wants to make public college free, period. Hillary Clinton only wants to make it debt-free, where students would be forced to work 10 hours per week and families would still have to pay what they can for college. Banking. Millennials recognize their future was compromised by letting the big banks wreck the economy. Bernie Sanders wants to break up the too-big-to-fail banks and hold the swindlers accountable. Hillary Clinton's top five lifetime campaign donors are big banks. gay rights. Millennials grew up with Will and Grace and Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. They don't have hang-ups about gay people. Bernie Sanders has been a stalwart supporter of gay rights for decades. Hillary Clinton just came around to supporting gay marriage in 2013, long after it became politically safe to do so. The baby boomers and the silent generation can pretend that millennials like Bernie Sanders because the boys are with Bernie, and they hate Hillary Clinton because of vicious trolling and attacks. But the truth is, millennials have the internet, and they can look up Bernie's and Hillary's positions and clearly see who best represents their interests. For years, Democrats have lamented that people who were voting Republican were voting against their own self-interest. It's funny to now see the establishment Democrats hoist by their own petard. Go Bernie! We're feeling the burn here at Rolla J Studios. We'll check up on those New Hampshire results on tomorrow's show. And we'll be right back after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Great websites today need expert web design and development and need to be e-commerce ready and mobile friendly. But building a marketable and profitable website can be an uphill climb. Ready to make your new website or replace your existing website? Think Orange as the new way to get in the black. Orange Hill Development works with Fortune 500 companies and offer the same top quality development service at a fraction of what other providers charge. Brands like Absolute, Carlsberg, and Nestea trust Orange Hill Development. Find out why you should trust your website with Orange Hill. Contact Orange Hill for a consultation today at orangehilldevelopment.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
I say, on this program, what do they want? My grandchildren and the monster. Did I scare you?
Okay. Maybe you're high, too.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
We all know that Prohibition was a disaster. It forced alcohol into the underground market where it was controlled by criminals, and consumers did not know what they were getting. It made us a nation of hypocrites and lawbreakers. Marijuana prohibition has caused a lot of the same problems. That's why most Vermonters agree it's time for a more sensible approach. Tell your state senator it's time to end prohibition and start regulating marijuana in Vermont.
Hello, Mr. Man.
Hi.
I'm working. I'm sorry. No food till this is done.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. 48 and a half after the hour here at Rolla J Studios. And just going through some of our social media. Checking that out. At Radical Russ. Also, rejecting a call. I don't know why people try to call me between 3 and 5. I'm busy. Make sure you're following at Canna Radio. That's the official feed for Cannabis Radio on Twitter, at Canna Radio. Somebody else got at Cannabis Radio, and we're trying to get it back, and we will eventually, but right now it's at Canna Radio. And like us. Like us on Facebook. Like us on the Spreaker page. You know, let's get those numbers up so that we can sell more ads and get Russ paid. That's right. Greed is ruining it. Greed is ruining everything. Yeah. My greed is like, wouldn't it be cool to be able to pay the rent every month? I can't complain too much, though. I've got the best job in the industry, really. I wake up and I read about weed and I write about weed and I smoke some weed and I talk about weed and I talk to other people about weed and I fly to places where there's weed and people give me their weed and I report on that weed and then I smoke some more weed and I go to bed. I mean, that's not a bad gig. I really got to talk to my high school guidance counselor about a severe lack of foresight because this beats the hell out of math teacher. All right. I want to get to another story that I had in the back burner here. And it's about potent pot. This is on Live Science, and there's some other places that are republishing this. So it's getting a lot of play these days. New study came out from the USDEA, and this is not a new study. This is just the latest report from Dr. El Soli down there at the Ole Miss pot farm, the United States' only legal pot farm. For those of you who are new listeners, you might know, might not know, but the United States government actually grows pot. Yeah, you may not have known that, but the United States government grows pot at a farm at the University of Mississippi, Ole Miss, has been doing so for decades, ever since Robert Randall sued back in 1978 to get medical marijuana for his glaucoma. And to this day, that farm at Ole Miss is supplying marijuana 8 or 9 ounces a month to 2 federal medical marijuana patients. Now, you may be asking yourself, wait a minute, Russ. If there's federal government weed being grown by the federal government being supplied to United States citizens for medical purposes under a federal medical program, how can the U.S. government possibly maintain that marijuana is a Schedule I drug with no medical use in the United States? Yeah, it's a good question, isn't it? I ain't got a good answer for you because by all the rules of logic, that should mean that medical marijuana exists, that there is a federal medical value to marijuana. But wait, it gets worse. The federal government actually owns patent number 6630507, a patent on the use of cannabinoids as antioxidants and neuroprotectants. Gee, that sounds kind of medical, doesn't it? But nope, that doesn't count either. Really, what's going on with marijuana being Schedule I is that the government says that it's a terribly dangerous drug of abuse that has no medical use in the United States. And since the government says that, then there is no accepted medical use in the United States. It seems kind of weird, doesn't it? That you'd think you'd have to prove something, don't you? But the thing is, the government doesn't have to prove a negative. And in this case, it's been sued. I mean, there's been lawsuits on this by Normal, by Carl Olson, by a bunch of people that have sued the federal government saying, wait, this is bullshit. You yourself say that there's medical use to it. How can you yourself say there's no medical use to it? And the federal government's response is, well, we don't have to prove there's a medical use for it. We just have to prove that there's not. And we say there's not. And that's all the proof we need. I mean, I'm simplifying it a bit, but really that's what it breaks down to. And then you get this pointing fingers, like where the executive branch, the president, will say, well, we can't do anything about that. It's up to Congress. And the Congress will say, well, we can't do anything about that because there's not enough studies. And then, well, how come there's not enough studies? Well, because the federal government says it's an illegal, dangerous drug. And so you can't study it because it's Schedule I. It's an illegal, dangerous drug that has no medical use. Okay, well, how can we prove that it has a medical use? Well, if you had some studies, then maybe you could prove it has medical use. But you just said we couldn't get the marijuana for the studies. We can't get the marijuana for the studies to prove that it has medical use. Since we can't get the studies to prove it has medical use, it has no medical use. And because it has no medical use, we can't get the marijuana for the studies. Because if we had those studies, we could prove it had medical use. But we can't get the marijuana because it has no medical use because there's no studies. That make you just want to pull your hair out or what? I mean, you should see me. I already have. It's absolute madness. And that's what kind of drew me to marijuana reform, right? Like, when I was in school, I liked math, and I liked geometry, and I liked science classes. And the reason why is because in those classes, there was an answer. 2 plus 2 has an answer. It's 4. And it can't be anything else. When you make your answer, it's either right or wrong in science. But when it comes to English and art and history and all those classes, it depends. It's an essay question, and maybe it's good, and maybe it's not. Maybe it's a little good, maybe it's a little bad. Maybe it's perfect, maybe it's not so perfect. Maybe there's a lot of maybes in there. So when I'm thinking of political issues, no other issue that I can think of is more math and less social studies than marijuana legalization. Like, every aspect of the marijuana issue has a clear and definitive answer to me that is 100% defensible. Now, if I had to be talking a show on U.S.-Israel policy, there's not a lot of really clear answers there, are there? There's a lot of what-ifs and maybes and depends in there. I'm not comfortable in that world. I like the world of science where there's clear, definitive answers that can be proven, that you can show your work and prove things. And to me, marijuana legalization is that issue. It's just so blatantly obvious to me when you talk about the federal scheduling being a complete catch-22 tautological argument. When we talk about prohibiting something and how it doesn't help what you're trying to solve and adds crime to the problem. When we have the example of alcohol prohibition not that many years ago to look at, that acts as kind of that historical proof that we need. When we get all of this, it just makes marijuana so obvious to me. And the latest scare is this scare about the potent pot. And they're saying, you know, Dr. Errol Soli's lab is saying that marijuana has gone from an average of 4% THC in 1995 to 12%. In 2014, and cannabidiol fell from 0.28% to 0.15%. Well, you know what made marijuana more potent and less CBD? Prohibition! Because the guy selling a bag of weed, the only thing he can market it with is how much it fucks you up. He can't market how tasty it is or how smelly it is, or any of these other factors don't make as much difference to the consumer as knowing when you got one bag, one choice from one source, that it's gonna be potent shit. Now we're seeing, as legalization is rolling out, companies that are rolling out low-strength marijuana to newer customers or returning customers who don't want to get so fucked up. If you're worried about the potent pot, you should support legalization so everybody knows how potent the pot is and can make the decision for themselves. Folks, that's all the time we got for today. Thanks for joining us. For everyone here at Roller J, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.